today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
I spent a lot of time in West Virginia when I was a boy growing up. My grandfather, Joseph Leon, an old Spanish guy, Spanish immigrant, he used to walk me up this mountain called the Pico. And he would take me there and tell me not to put my shoes on. And I would walk up this little mountain in Anmore, West Virginia, and not wear shoes and go over all the gravel and stuff like that. And he would call me a Green Beret. And I would feel very proud of that fact. He got a lot of hard time from my parents and from other people in our family saying, why you let that boy walk up there without shoes on? He said he was training me to be a Green Beret. I never really became a Green Beret, but in my mind, you know, I still walk a lot without my shoes. Maybe it's a psychological thing. I don't know. But my next guest is an actual Green Beret amongst many other things. Some people live life on full tilt, and this guy certainly does. His name is Michael Yon. He is an American writer and photographer. He served in the Special Forces in the early 1980s, and he became a writer in the mid-90s. He focused on military writing after the invasion of Iraq. Yon has been embedded on numerous occasions with American and British troops in Iraq, most prominently a deployment with the 1st Battalion, 24th Infantry Regiment, of the 25th Infantry Division of Iraq that ended in September 2005. Yon has had vocal feuds with United States military hierarchy, and the nature of his reports is also controversial. In 2008, the New York Times reported that he had spent more time embedded with combat units than any other journalist in Iraq. He shifted his focus, blogging from Iraq to Afghanistan. In August 2008, his work is supported primarily by donations from his readers. He is here with us now, Michael, reporting from Japan, where protests are going on. How are you? Thank you for coming on. I think it's a late hour for you too, so we really appreciate it.
Japan. It's funny that you were walking barefoot up the mountain. Before I went to Green Beret training, I used to walk barefoot a lot, actually, myself. Yeah, I haven't thought about that in years. But anyway, go ahead, sir.
Well, no, I was going to say yesterday I was doing a hike. I'm in Arizona. There's lots of mountains here, and I still do barefoot. I have and some guy gave me a hard time yesterday because I was on a trail barefoot, because I believe in grounding. I mean, it's sustained by science. Yeah. It's supposed to drain all this negative electric energy out of us and stuff. And he was like, barefoot, why don't you just walk on your hands? You would fit right in Africa. He said, I don't know where he got that, but he was mad at me. People are sensitive. Feet are sensitive, and people are sensitive about feet, I have noticed.
What do you think about those flat shoes? That's what I've been wearing around here. That, you know, it's not barefoot. You can't get on an airplane like that, but they're very comfortable. I can't wear them here because I'm in the house. I'm in Japan. They're by the front door, but you know what I mean? They have no arch. Your toes can splay out like you're barefoot.
Yeah, I have Vibram running shoes, and then there's those like invisible, basically nothing sandals. I go on barefoot runs too. It's just, I don't know. I like it. I think there's something to it. Maybe it's my own little training for all the stuff you've been talking about. I was on that hike. I was listening to an interview you recently did about the Darien Gap, and it's phenomenal what's going on. But you were about to tell me something about what's going on where you are currently in Japan, right?
Oh, yeah. I just came in from Canada for a protest that was for last Saturday, so 8 days ago now. And there were only supposed to be 300 or 400 people there. I was with Masako Ganaha, the Japanese journalist, and she was to speak at the protest, which she did. But about 19,000 showed up, not 300 or 400. So it was huge.
Wow.
And people were sending me links from the United States. Alex Jones sent me a message. It was on his show. A lot of people were asking me if I heard about the protest in Japan while it was still live streaming. I'm like, I'm in it. I mean, yeah, it was right in the middle of it. And so now they're going to do two more protests in May, One will be on the 22nd and 23rd of May. I think that'll be the smaller one, is my guess. But then the guess for the last one is it would be 300 or 400 people. It was 19,000. But anyway, I'm going to guess that the one on the 22nd and 23rd will be relatively small. And the one on 31 May coming up will be probably pretty big. So I've asked a few people if they want to come over for that, like Alex. And we'll see, but I will be at both of them. And this is the World Health Organization pandemic treaty. They're pushing this pandemic treaty that will take all of our rights. I mean, you'll basically be a veterinary, you know, style animal here. I mean, you'll be livestock if this passes. I mean, you're not going to be able to do anything without. You know, the World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party and all those people running your life. So this is absolutely important and vital to interrupt this treaty and not allow it to go through. We see people resisting in Netherlands for this and in Canada. Some people in the United States, we need to wake up our brothers and sisters in the United States to fight back on this thing right now. It's very important. It's literally as important as the invasion on our border. The invasion on our border obviously is an existential threat to the United States and will kill us at this rate. I mean, it will genocide us. I've seen what's happened in Canada already and what's happened in Europe. I spent a lot of time in Europe and in Canada. I mean, Canada's basically gone with the wind at this point. You should see the place. And also here in Japan, I'm in actually Saitama Prefecture. Let me get a glass of water here. Hold on. I'm in Saitama, which is near Tokyo, actually. And in Saitama now, there's a huge amount of Kurds, friends, as an example. I love Kurds. I was out with Kurds a lot in the Iraq War and even in Thailand and other places. There's a lot of Kurds in Tennessee. But when they come to Japan, they will not mix with Japanese. I mean, they'll mix, but they're not going to become Japanese. They're not going to, they will form their own, what's called an anthro insula, a human island, anthro for human and insula for island. It's a human island. It's an oil spot, right? They'll form an oil spot, just like we have many people doing in Minneapolis or other places. They'll be their own cultures within cultures. And this makes for an incredible weak point for your enemies to destabilize your country. It's a long formula. It's been done many times. So I've been warning yesterday, or not yesterday, now 2 days ago now, since this is already Sunday. But on Friday, I spoke at the Diet here. The Diet is the Japanese parliament, right? So I was actually invited there to just go observe something. And while I happened to be sitting there, they asked me if I wanted to speak. So I spoke. So came out of the blue. And I warned them about the what's happening. I mean, the United Nations, who are the same ones with the World Health Organization and all the whole gang, are the ones pushing the pandemic treaty. But they're also the ones that are facilitating the invasion. Of course, the main investors, if you want to call it investors, in our demise is the United States government. Is the main funder of the invasion of the United States. As an example, we're the ones putting the most money into the United Nations, and specifically for the invasion, the engine of the invasions is the IOM, the International Organization for Migration, right? And the International Organization for Migration, although they are not, they didn't create themselves, of course, they were created to do these invasions, and they're very effective at it. Down in Panama, we deal with IOM all the time. They're the main engine. Now, of course, there's HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and many others that are sort of subcontractors, you might say, for IOM, but they also get their own donations. But so it's a who's who in the zoo, many, many dozens. Actually, in total, it could be over 250. We're unclear, actually, because in every different country, there are so many different NGOs that are involved. And they kind of pop up and disappear and change their names. But there are a few that are steady state, like Catholic Charities. But even when you look at Catholic Charities, when you start to dig down into it, Catholic Charities is not a monolith. There's numerous numerous branches of Catholic Charities in Florida that are incorporated or, let's say, registered under different names. It'll be like Catholic Charities of so-and-so, right? And so it's not it's not as easy to nail down as people might think, you know, always follow the money, but it's like they intentionally obfuscate the source of the Nile, the source of everything, except that we know that the World Economic Forum, the Chinese Communist Party, and those globalists are the ones that are actually ultimately behind us. We were just over that the World Economic Forum, the Chinese Communist Party, and those globalists are the ones that are actually ultimately behind us. We were just over in Vancouver about 10 days ago, and there's a Chinese police station there. We were in it. We were physically inside the police station, and it's marked. You know, many of these police stations are unmarked. Like we went to one in London that was completely unmarked, and actually they denied that they were there. But when we showed up at nighttime, when, you know, it was dark outside, we hit the button and ni hao said ni hao, and they answered in Mandarin. And then they proceeded to deny that they're actually a police station. But anyway, they were. We found them after some effort. We were at one in Dublin, which was similar. That one was actually marked until we reported on it. And then they took the placard off the next day when we were actually in Dublin and went to theirs as well. But what I'm getting to in Canada, they're open. I mean, they're open about it. You know, interestingly, just down the street from that Chinese police station in Vancouver, the Canadian government is giving away free drugs. I mean, like cocaine. They're not giving away just the needles like they do in Portland. Like we've gone to Portland and they'll give you the needles. I mean, we got a bunch of them and the rubber bands to do the drugs and all that. But in Canada, they're actually giving out the drugs themselves. Like we went into that clinic and they were actually, I mean, they kicked us out actually. So that was about 10 or 11 days ago, right? They were very angry that we walked in their, you know, drug dispensing clinic. And when we weren't the ones that needed the drugs, it was pretty amazing. You know, interestingly, when we go around the world, I've reported on China for years. I've spent about a year in and around China. I spent about 18 years in Asia, right? So I've seen the ecosystem. I've been in 25 different Asian countries, right? So I'm very familiar with the Chinese ecosystem. Many people have this idea that China is not imperialistic or expansionist. I assure you that it is. In fact, I was in Tibet. They've taken Tibet. They're taking Xinjiang right now. They've taken Macau, of course. They took Hong Kong when I was there and kicked me out. They're getting ready to take Taiwan. Interesting thing about Taiwan, by the way. Ask people often, because I'll even intelligence people and analysts and whatnot, they will say Taiwan, the breakaway province of China, and then they proceed with their whatever analysis. And I'll often ask, Taiwan was a breakaway province of China. Actually, when was Taiwan part of China? And I'll just let it hang there, you know, especially these analysts who, you know, make the big statements about they know what's going on. And bottom line is Taiwan was never part of China, ever. Zero seconds. It was never a part of China. It just wasn't. That's information war. Information war is the highest form of warfare, right? And everything is subordinate to information war when it comes to warfare. That's why we have no borders, is information war. We have no borders. And I've been across the entire so-called southern border of the United States from SpaceX at Boca Chica all the way to San Diego. I've been across the entire thing, much of it on the Mexican side and all of it on the American side. It doesn't really exist anymore. The border only exists for people that are going to obey the law, or you have trucks that are coming over and you have to get them inspected or whatever. But for people that just want to get into the United States, the border does not exist. And on the Canadian border, It's more than 4,000 miles. It's the biggest border in the world. I was just up on that border as well. It's wide open. I would say to be directionally accurate, 99.9% of that border is completely unguarded, right? The Canadian border. And so we've got people coming and going both directions in Canada. Actually, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese Army, has actually trained in Canada with the Canadian Army. You can't make up this stuff. I mean, at first, a lot of people thought that was conspiracy theory. It was absolutely not conspiracy theory. They definitely, 100%, the People's Liberation Army was definitely training with the Canadian Army. And that's just a done deal. Now, when they got caught doing it and pictures came out, they were very embarrassed and they ended the training, but they were doing it. And now, you know, interesting, going to these dragons that you see all over the place, I'm always watching dragons and I'm counting their claws. For instance, If you see a Chinese dragon, count how many claws it has. If it has three claws, if it has three, that means the place where they put the dragon is their friend. If it has four claws, then the four-clawed dragon, then they're saying that the people, you know, where this dragon is they're your relatives, like cousins of mainland Han Chinese, right? If it has five claws, that's saying that we claim that land. That's Imperial Chinese land, right? And you look at the dragons in Chinatown in Vancouver, all five claws, right? They're claiming the land, right? For that's China, right? When you go to Vancouver and you land at the airport, the Vancouver airport is not actually in Vancouver. It's in Richmond. Which is right next to Vancouver, Richmond is basically all Chinese. I mean, it's China. It's actually China. Just call it China. Just call it the real Chinatown. I mean, there's Chinatown, which is down the road a ways. And then there's Richmond, which is, I mean, it's Chinese. And then right next to Richmond is Surrey, which is Indian. I mean, so that's on the western part of Canada. You go to the eastern part in Toronto when we landed at the airport, and there were signs in Ukrainian and English and welcoming Ukrainians. And there's, you know, a bunch of chairs lined up so the Ukrainians can sit down and do their paperwork and be welcomed into Canada. And then after we went to Toronto, by the way, we flew to a place called Yellowknife in Northwest Territories. Yellowknife is 250 miles from the Arctic Circle, right? I hadn't been there since 1984 or so. I went up there when I was a Green Beret, actually, just on leave. But it's a very remote area. Yellowknife is the capital of the Northwest Territories. It's an incredible place to look at the Northern Lights. But we were up there for something else. You got to keep in mind, there's a Northwest Passage that the Russians and Chinese are very busy on, which would actually, it's a huge corridor for trade, right? And military work up by the Arctic Circle where ships can go, right? The Northwest Passage. Now, to take that Northwest Passage and make it yours, you need to really take or influence Northern Canada, which would mean like Northwest Territories, where we just went to. So we went to Yellowknife and we're there 2 weeks ago or so. And it's, you wouldn't believe it. There's a huge amount of Africans there. I mean, like Ugandans and Eritreans and Somalis. And if you go to Yellowknife right now, or maybe you're watching this from Yellowknife, which would be unlikely because there's not many people there. But a lot of the people there are actually Chinese and Indians and I mean Indians from India and also Africans. And I asked so many Africans. I was there for about a week. I asked so many Africans, you know, isn't this cold? I mean, I'm from Florida. You know, this is this is 400 kilometers, 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. But the reason that they're up there is a demographic warfare. It's weaponized migration is what it is to actually take Northwest Territories so that they can make the Northwest Passage, right? And I mean, it's weaponized migration, right? And so that's what's going on. It's an invasion and think about that. When Canada is gone, which essentially it's gone at this point, it's not completely gone over Niagara Falls yet, but it's right there. It's the canoes, you know, tipping down. And that's a perfect place to invade the United States. And remember, the invasion doesn't happen with tanks and that sort of thing. It happens the same way that China did Tibet. Again, I was in Tibet. The way China took Tibet was mostly they supplanted the local population. The Tibetans are up in northern India. The Tibetans are in Nepal. They're in Hong Kong. They're in United States. They're in Germany. They're not that many in Tibet anymore, right? Because the Han Chinese ran them out. They're also nibbling away at Nepal. I spent a year in Nepal. The Chinese are nibbling away up there. They're nibbling away at Bhutan. I went there a few years ago looking into that, maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. They're nibbling away at Bhutan. They're nibbling away at everything. You know, they're nibbling away at Philippines and just a long list, right? And so it's just a matter of time. Until right now, I was just recently in Bahamas. China is building a huge embassy in the Bahamas. They've already taken a port that's about 60 miles off the Florida coast. Yeah, about 100 kilometers. You can see it on Google Earth. I was just over in Bahamas. I spent, I don't know, 10 days or so there. They're literally And they bought a hotel right across from the U.S. Embassy, right? The hotel is clearly a listening post for the U.S. Embassy, right? I just had lunch and dinner in that hotel recently. It's a very expensive hotel. It's a it's obviously an electronic warfare center. And but also China is taking Antigua, right? China is taking a lot of things. They have surrounded us and Americans are asleep. A war is building between Venezuela and Guyana and CCP, Chinese Communist Party, Russia, and Iran are very close allies with Venezuela, right? And by the way, those missiles that the Houthi have used to close the Red Sea, they're also supplying to Venezuela. They can close the Panama Canal. I think that doesn't dawn on a lot of people how important the Panama Canal is. It's that important to us. It's very important. It's absolutely vital to the United States, not just so that our Navy can go back and forth, but for trade, right? And they can close that down through various mechanisms. And it is on the table. I spend a lot of time in Panama. Often when I leave Panama, I'll go to Netherlands. Netherlands is another vital terrain because you've got Rotterdam Harbor there, which is the biggest harbor in Europe. And just south of Rotterdam Harbor is Antwerp Harbor in Belgium. So those are the two main harbors for Europe, the two biggest ones. And they're also two in the top 10 in the world. Now, there's a railway that goes all the way from Shanghai and other feeders in China, and it goes right to Rotterdam, right? Rotterdam is at the mouth of the Rhine River, which is like the Mississippi of Europe, right? And so China and the World Economic Forum are working very hard to take Netherlands. And they're working to do that so that they can control those two harbors. They want to build something called Tri-State City, three-state city, which is most of look at this little thumbs go up with the AI when I do a thumbs up. They want to build a tri-state city with three-state city, which is all of Netherlands, part of Belgium, and part of Germany. And this is to be a large, smart city, which is. We need to use the accurate terms when we say things. Smart city. Actually, the accurate terminology for that is prison city. The World prison Economic city. Forum. Yeah, it's a prison city. So they want to build this large. Go ahead, sir.
You are a fountain of knowledge, and it's intense, man. I mean, I wanted to talk about the Darien Gap too. I wanted to see how this all relates together, the protests you're doing in Japan, what you think China's end game is here, the infrastructure they're building in the Darien Gap, and essentially why you think this attack is happening on America. I mean, obviously, we're the last bastion of freedom of the modern world. So that would explain it. But there's so much to get into. I got to focus you somehow in this interview. I got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Michael Yan right after these words on TNT.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
If you go back 3 years ago and ask people why they're wearing a face mask, they'll soon give you an answer. But if you go back 4 years ago and ask the same person why they're not wearing a face mask, the two answers would be so extremely distant from each other that it'll boggle your mind. The only thing that changed was that someone on a television told them they might die if they didn't. Part of the reason we're in such dire straits today is the inability for some people to question the basic principles of what they've been told.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
And we're back with Michael Yon, who is basically trying to tell us that we're in a full-scale war right now that is multifaceted and complicated, and he spends all his time investigating the different aspects of it. So he is a fountain of knowledge of it. I'm wondering if he can simplify, Michael, I wonder if you can simplify sort of the different components of the war that we're in, how it's working, what the motivation is, and what Americans can do, essentially. Also, you've warned about a famine coming on and just, you know, how dire the situation is.
Yeah, let's talk about that famine and how that it will drive the human osmotic pressure, which drives the weaponized migration, right? I mean, this is a big deal. This is one of the biggest weapons ever used by mankind, is just weaponized migration, right? Invasion by, demographic invasion does not always include tanks. In fact, it often has no tanks. And so, but the famines that are building, there's a long flash to bang on these famines. Let's go back to Netherlands for that. A couple of years ago, before Nord Stream was interrupted, I went to Germany twice to BASF plant. This is important. The BASF plant is the biggest chemical company in the world. BASF is their plant at Ludwigshafen, Germany, which is right on the Rhine River, which dumps out at Rotterdam Harbor, which we just talked about. That's where they first started doing what's called the Haber-Bosch process, which takes the hydrogen off the natural gas, combines it with the nitrogen that we're breathing, and makes ammonia. And with that ammonia, they make explosives and they make nitrogenous fertilizers, right? So you make like ammonium sulfate, ammonium nitrate, urea, that sort of thing. Anyway, so that started in 1914 there at Ludwigshafen. And now you saw the world population start to explode, right? It didn't explode only because of nitrogenous fertilizers, but that was a big engine of it. Also, that's the year 1914 that the Panama Canal opened. And so there's other reasons why the world population started to grow, such as refrigeration and electricity and running water and that sort of thing. But the bottom line is nitrogenous fertilizers are one of the main engines, and those are being interrupted. And that's why I went to BASF twice before Nord Stream was cut, because I suspected they were going to cut Nord Stream. So I was there with Misako Ganaha at BASF, and I asked somebody inside the plant. It's a 10 square kilometer plant, right? And so I asked him, what happens if Nord Stream is interrupted? This was before it was interrupted. He said, we are dead. Well, now it's gone. It's been destroyed, right? And I predicted that publicly. I thought that it would be destroyed, and it was, right? And in case, it's funny, a member of the Japanese parliament asked me on Friday who I thought did it. And I said it was either space aliens or it was the United States. It was one of those two, right? And so I thought the United States was going to do it in advance. And anyway, something's happened. It's gone. So that is very important. I also was going to a place called Groningen. It's the biggest gas field in Europe. It's in Netherlands, right? So I was there last March, March 2023, not 24. And I was there and I was on the Jordan Peterson show. And I think I said it with Jordan Peterson. I think they're going to close Groningen because it's the biggest gas field in Europe. And people would say, but why would they do that? Well, why would they interrupt Nord Stream? Because they're clearly trying to push us, deindustrialize Europe, and push us into global famines, right? That the global famines will create something called HOP, human osmotic pressure. Human osmotic pressure, that HOP, is the push and pull of migration. Now, as these routes are established, for instance, in the Darien Gap, where I spend so much time, it's between Colombia and Panama, the Darien Gap, the routes that are established into Europe, the routes that are being established to here in Japan, as those routes are established by the IOM and others of the United Nations, such as HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, as those routes are established and these famines finally will begin at some point, that will drive tremendous HOP. Places like the United States will be overwhelmed. And, you know, people that think they're going to defend their little homeland with an AR-15, you're out of your mind. You're not going to do it. You either do it now or you're going to lose, period. You will.
How do they do it now? How do they do it now, Michael?
Right now, the bottom line is that border has to be closed. And we see everybody getting distracted with Ukraine and Israel and all these things and not paying attention to our border and continuing to vote for people who are not focused on the border. We see people talking about everything under the sun except for our border, right? Our border will kill us dead. At this point, we're already not going to get through this without bloodshed. There is no way. Because if you just sit still and do nothing, they will come for you, right? Some of the things that we've warned about for a long time, many people have warned about this. For instance, that they will be, at some point, these aliens, we have to call things what they are, by the way. Words are atomic structures of truth and untruth. We can't select wrong words and get at truth. If you start with the wrong words, the rest of the book will be wrong. For instance, by calling these death jabs, if you call it a vaccine, it's not a vaccine. All right. The rest of the discussion is flat out wrong because it's not a vaccine. It's clearly a weapon, right? Clearly a weapon. The migration, quote unquote, is clearly at minimum
an invasion.
Weaponized migration. It is an invasion. The people that do invasions are called invaders, right? We have to call things what they are, right? You know, for instance, you would not go to a doctor that will tell you a lie because you don't want to hear the truth about what he's diagnosed. You know, if a doctor, if you go to an oncologist and he realizes you've got cancer, or she says you got cancer, maybe the doctor knows you don't want to hear that. So I said, well, it's just a headache. You know, go take some aspirin. You'll be fine. You know, that's the same thing with this so-called migration. And they call it a border crisis. It is not a border crisis. It is an invasion. Even people that I know that are constantly on the border at this late stage who still call it migration, I don't listen to their feeds anymore. I never retweet them anymore. Even though they know a lot about the border, they're using the wrong words. They're like an oncologist that calls cancer a headache. They're keeping everybody asleep by calling it migration or a border crisis. That, listen, when you're fighting an information war, which is our primary war, you can never give your enemy the words. You never let them take the words. You don't let them seize the words. And every time I bring this up to my friends who cover the border, stop calling it migration. Stop calling it a border crisis. They say, yeah, but it's going to offend people. I'm like, you mean offend people like chopping off their head and kicking off their head down the street like a soccer ball? Because that's what's about to happen, right?
Isn't it wild?
This is a straight up war. Don't worry about offending people.
Right. Isn't it wild? No, but it's okay. That social shame is really at the core of all these invasions, if you think about it. Like with the vaccine, or the so-called vaccine, excuse me. And I never called it a vaccine. So I don't know why I just almost did in front of a guy that would really hate it if I did. But that was led by social shame. Everybody was afraid to speak up on that. And the same thing with the border. It's social shame that is going to do us in, that we are afraid to tell the truth about these things. And I mean, in your view, what can we do? You said close the border, but what politician isn't captured in your view, or who will wake this up enough to sort of get us irate enough to where we want to protect our own security as Americans?
For starters, we have to call things what they are, right? While you and I call these things what they are, and many others are as well, that's important because it gets people focused on the fact that we are actually in a war, right? And it will get eventually incredibly bloody, right? A genocide is unfolding. I mean, the biggest genocides in human history are clear. That, listen, you've heard the military saying before, amateurs talk about tactics, professionals talk about logistics, right? There's a corollary to that. Amateurs talk about sparks. Professionals talk about conditions, right? Conditions. It's all about conditions. When you want to win a battle, you set conditions to win the battle. One of those conditions is logistics, right? And so what's happening now is our enemies, who are quite capable. Notice that not one American general or admiral, nobody on active duty, stood up against the death jabs. Not a single one, right? Not a single one has said a word, not a peep, to my knowledge. Please correct me if I'm wrong, about the invasion. They're all just keeping their head down, just doing their job, sir, like good Nazis. Yeah, you're not supposed to compare people to Nazis, but let's face it, what's Nazism? You take fascism plus racism, and that is straight up what Nazism was. It was fascism with a racial component, right? Fascism is just when government and business are so entwined that they become like salt water. They're a solution. They're not an amalgam. They're not separate, right? So that's what Nazism actually was. They took fascism and they made it put a racial component on it. And that's what this literally has become. And, you know, you see our enemies are constantly projecting terms onto us about what they're doing, like calling everybody a Nazi who stands up. I mean, it's because they are literally promulgating Nazi policy, right? I mean, you know, you're never supposed to compare somebody to a Nazi, but sometimes it's actually appropriate. And this is that time, actually, and weirdly. And so here we go. The information war is what has allowed this to happen. We have to fight the information war. Not anytime somebody brings up and like a congressman or a senator or anybody, the mayor, some interviewer that you're talking with or whatever, anytime they bring up migration, stop them. Just stop and start arguing the term, the difference between a vax and a weapon or a migration and an invasion. Just do not let them proceed. Recently, I took Brett Weinstein down to the Darien Gap, my team and I, Operation Burning Edge, and Vandersteel, Masako Ganaha, and others. We took Brett Weinstein. We took Chris Martinson. We took Laura Loomer. We took congressmen. We took a lot of people, dozens and dozens, right? New York Times actually tracked us down at the Darien Gap on the last trip. They're so desperate. But interestingly, Jordan Peterson was on recently with Brett Weinstein, and it was a good interview, except that in the beginning, when they started talking about migration, quote unquote, they called it migration. So you got this fork in the road where you're going to choose the right word or you're going to choose the wrong word.
But there you go. That underlines the problem, because you got those guys like Brett Weinstein and Jordan Peterson, obviously they're concerned with their social status. I mean, and I'm not dissing them by saying that. It's just they won't use the hard words because of the social shame that will follow. If those guys call it an invasion, they're putting their heads on a chopping block. I mean, and this underlies the whole problem, because everyone's being way too casual about what's going on. I was talking to this prepper survivalist.
That's perfect, what you just said.
Thank you. Well,
I'm going to start using that.
Yeah, everyone's too casual. And, you know, the fact that there's a military age men coming into our country, they all have the same packs, apparently. And he was saying that the grid is going to go down and those guys are all going to be ready and we're going to be completely ill-prepared for what's going on. I mean, other than getting the language right, I wonder what we can really do. I mean, what we have to do is dismantle social shame and the fear of using the proper language, as you say, because most Americans are completely asleep. I mean, even with the World Health Organization protests you're doing there, I mean, and I'm probably guilty of this, it seems to me like, you know, the anti-vaxxers have won the war. Nobody really, I think, believes in the vaccine or the so-called vaccine, the jab, that's mildly awake. So we probably feel like the danger of that is over for really stealing our freedoms again. You're saying it's not. And then these are multifaceted attacks that are going to sort of conglomerate and do us in. I got to take a quick break, man. I wish I could talk to you for at least 3 hours on this, because I wanted to get in the Darien Gap and the infrastructure they're building for this invasion as well down there. But I really want to get your take on what we can do outside of just getting the language right, like what Americans can do, how they can prepare for what's going on, and how we can try to wake up the world, essentially, to protect our freedom and our country. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like LaToya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
LaToya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Asthma is a growing problem, especially among children. Asthma affects the quality of life for millions like me every single day. My name is Chris Draft, and I have asthma. And I've spent more than a decade in the NFL tackling asthma on and off the field. Join me in the EPA in helping people control their asthma. Asthma is a lung condition that can be controlled through medication and by avoiding things that can make it worse. Three steps are the solution to controlling asthma. Step one, talk to a doctor. Step two, make a plan. And step three, get rid of things that can make it worse. Asthma can be tackled. For more information on asthma, log on to epa.gov/asthma.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with a fountainhead of knowledge, Michael Yon. We're talking about the so-called immigration crisis, the invasion, he says. And we were just talking about the war we are currently under. You were actually on the break telling me that you've been going after Joe Rogan for being too casual about all this as well. And I'm wondering, too, if you can... if you have insight into what this will look like when people will be unable to still be asleep to what's going on, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this pandemic treaty will take all of your rights away. I mean, you'll be a slave straight up. And if you don't fight, remember, if you're asking for freedom, you're a slave. Slaves ask for stuff from the government, right? They're like, hey, can we do this? That's slave talk, right? An American says, we're going to do this, right? And the government can resist us, right? But the bottom line is we have reached a point where, look, I've been to Tibet. Tibet's gone. I mean, you see all these people flying the, free Tibet flags, prayer flags all over the place. I'm like, you're not getting Tibet back. It's over, right? They have taken it. Now, maybe China will split apart one day and magically you can move back over there. But the Tibetans now have been gone so long. Their children have been raised outside of Tibet. They've been raised in places like Nepal, where I spent a year. Actually, I drove from Kathmandu one time up to Lhasa, which is the capital, and then flew over to Beijing. But I spent some time up in Tibet. They're not getting it back. And likewise, it's going on right now with Xinjiang, with the Uyghurs. China's taking that. They're mostly doing it through just replacing people, hot swapping the people out and killing a lot of them. Hong Kong, I was there for 7 months in 2019 and 20. I got kicked out. You could see it on the news. The police actually put me on the airplane and told me to go away, right? So, but the bottom line is, how did they take Hong Kong? It wasn't just through police force. Mostly it was weaponized migration. It was the drip, drop, day in and day out, bringing Han Chinese in, mainland Chinese, who speak a different language. They speak Mandarin, and the Hong Kongers mostly speak Cantonese, which are different languages. Americans tend to say Chinese, but Chinese isn't actually a language. Mandarin is. Fujianese is.
I would be guilty of Cantonese. But Michael, how's this going to look in America? You know, like, what do you see as happening in the next few years? What can we look out for? How fast do you think this will drop on us? And when do you think it'll be too late?
For Canada, I would say it's too late. You know, I mean, at this point, because they're not showing the testosterone to stand up, right? And
what about
for
America?
Much of Europe as well, and Sweden as well, like, as an example. United States, this is it, man. You either do it now or you're going to lose, period. You're going to be like the Tibetans. Some will just die in place. They're going to take your homes.
But do what? I mean, it would require major media figures to start speaking out on this. And like you just said, with Brett Weinstein and Jordan Peterson, as good as they sometimes are on a lot of these issues, they soft sell it. And this is the problem you're saying. You also were talking about being vocally critical of Joe Rogan. What do you wish Joe Rogan would do? Is Alex Jones speaking on this? I mean, we are right here right now, but how do we get these other more major figures in media to start speaking on this?
Alex Jones, he's A-team on it. He's calling it what it is. It's a straight up invasion. I mean, Alex Jones gets an A on that sort of stuff. He did push the jab for a while, but he does strike out sometimes, like everybody does. Especially Alex is always trying to predict way ahead, and he's quite good at it, actually. But obviously, when you're doing what Alex, he's not talking about history, right? He's talking about what he thinks coming down the road, which is what we need to know, right? And he's been very strangely accurate, actually. He's very good at it.
I know. Did you see the Tucker Carlson interview with Joe Rogan? They were talking about how Alex was like sort of channeling. That's what Tucker said about 9/11. And then Joe Rogan played another clip, which was pretty phenomenal. So, yeah.
Yeah, Alex, for years, because mostly I spent my time out of the United States. I'm American, but I've spent most of my life in other countries, right? Two-thirds or three-quarters of my life has been outside of the United States. Certainly my adult life has been mostly gone, right? In 98 other countries, right? So I wasn't paying attention to Alex Jones until about 4 years ago when I returned to the United States. They kicked me out of Hong Kong. The pandemic did its thing. So I just read books for about 6 or 7 months. And then finally, I was like, yeah, the United States is actually going into a civil war. War is my business, you know? And so I was like, wow, you know, I feel like an oncologist who realizes his own country has cancer. So I flew back to the United States and went straight to Portland. And I was out with the Antifa guys quite a lot up there. There was a bunch of druggies mostly, actually. And I was out with in their riots and that sort of thing. They had this red house that they took over at one point. There was a sort of a huge protest. I went into the red house protest area. They had a refrigerator out there. It was only for vegan stuff, or, you know, it had a sign. I photographed it and I opened it up, and you can do anything. You can get away with anything for just a few minutes. So I stayed there about 20 or 30 minutes. But I looked inside the refrigerator. It had chicken and hot dogs and cheeses and stuff. I'm like, so these are the big vegetarians or vegans or whatever they are of Antifa. Okay, whatever. I got photographs of all of it. But anyway.
They were tofu dogs, man.
Come on. My gosh, yeah. Kidding. And so anyway, I went to January 6th. I saw that. I was down in Antifa protest in Atlanta and up in Philadelphia and a lot of things like that. I was just watching, you know, getting a pulse of what's going on. And over in Europe, the same. I go over there quite a lot. And in here in Japan and other parts of Asia. But the bottom line is the United States will go into, it will become kinetic at some point. There will be a Night of the Long Knives. For those who've forgotten what Night of the Long Knives was, in 1934, when Hitler did the big purge before he really came to power, it started in one night. You know, they had the big list of who's been naughty and nice. And he came out there and he killed a huge number of his enemies. And also not just his enemies, but people that were within his own party, but who challenged, who may be able to replace him at some point. He killed them as well. So he killed a lot of people that were not necessarily enemies, but could potentially take his position, right? He killed his competition, who were not actually enemies as well. So the bottom line is then, you know, of course, then the war over time picked up steam. That's clearly coming to the United States. Right now, we see people being put in jail. We see just the constriction of the boa constrictor around the United States is getting tighter and tighter. But you go over to Europe and that thing's about squeezed the breath out of them. Have you been to Europe recently?
I was there actually at Jam for Freedom. I played the UK and I'm getting ready to go back over there and tour in France too. So I've been there recently.
Look at the royal family. This is an oligarchical fight, by the way. You know, this is oligarch versus oligarch. You know, this is an interesting book on oligarchical fights, the Machiavellians. And, you know, it's interesting. You see the British royal family. They were big jab pushers, and three of them have cancer now. Probably a coincidence. Who knows, right? But, you know, because kings still kill kings. The crown princess in Thailand is in a vegetative state. She took two Moderna and two AstraZeneca, right? And so if you web search my name and Prime Minister of Thailand, you'll see me flying around with the Prime Minister. I'm pretty deeply entrenched in Thailand. I know one of her doctors, right? As an example. I mean, the bottom line is that the royal family of the British royal family, they seem to have targeted their own country. They helped their own country get invaded. I mean, is it because they're just punks in the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and everybody else shamed them into allowing their own country to replace them there in London, London Stan? You know, I haven't been to London in about a year and a half or so. And, but you can see it's London. I went inside that huge mosque, by the way. I was in there for about an hour. It's a huge mosque. I mean, there's more than one, of course, but they've been supplanted. The weaponized migration, and then the royal family was pushing the jabs and whatnot. Now, a lot of people will say, by the way, the royal family never would have taken the jab. How do you know that? Actually, I've studied pandemic quite a lot before this pandemic and now even afterwards, even more. But because pandemic, famine, and war, they go together. They are out of the Bible's four horsemen. That's three of the horsemen: pandemic, famine, and war. They always go together. If you get a big war,
we can see them coming too. We can see them coming. Let me ask you this: the guy who set himself on fire, off the top of my head, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but his whole take was that Biden and Trump are together and they're, you know, coming after us with a fascist regime or whatever. Do you think there is any worthy presidential candidate? Do you agree with him? Is Trump, is Trump captured with Biden, or do you think Trump is a potential hope for us?
Well, let's follow the evidence. Trump pushed the jab. You know, Newt Gingrich called me up before the election with Clinton. I was in my Thailand office at that time, and he called me up, and he was trying to gin up support for Trump. And I told him at that time, this was before the Clinton election, and I said, you know, I don't trust Trump at all, but I'll never vote for Clinton, period. And obviously not. That's straight up. Evil, you know, but Trump obviously won. I voted against Clinton that time, so I checked beside Trump holding my nose. Then we got to this last election, which was clearly stolen. But then also Trump.
How dare you, Michael? How dare you?
Oh, my conservative friends and family, boy, they have been upset when I'm like, Trump pushed the jab. And they go, well, he didn't force us to take it. He didn't make us. I'm like, stop hitting me with that slave language. He didn't make us take it. He allowed us to have hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. They always say he allowed us. I mean, what do you talk about? He allowed us. I mean, that's slave talk. You know, you take it. You don't ask daddy. That's a British way of thinking. I'm not British. I'm American. I'm not a German, right? I'm American. We don't ask daddy for permission about what we're going to put into our body, right? And, you know, Pablo Escobar
would have resisted. You got cut off, but the people would have resisted lockdown more if there wasn't like the so-called freedom guy like Trump in office when they brought the lockdowns on us.
Yeah, imagine it. Yeah. I mean, I look at this from an information war perspective, right? I've written three books on information war. Unfortunately, they're only in Japanese. They're not in English because I've been working to wake up Japanese for so long. Japan is a vital partner to the United States. But interestingly, when you look at this from an information war perspective, which is one of the main lenses I use, Trump is one of them. When you look at it through that lens, he's clearly kayfabe, that wrestling term, you know. This is clearly he's clearly controlled opposition.
Controlled, yeah.
He's clearly. I mean, it's like obvious, right? Now people go, "What are our choices?" These are the only choices they give us. Again, that slave talk. The reason these are the only choices we have is because people will accept the least of evils, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to accept that, that's what will be put on your plate.
We got to have you back on, Michael. This was amazing. There's so much more to go through. It's insane. But anyway, tell people where Let's to find it. You.
Well, I'm on X every day. I have not been deplatformed. It doesn't feed out much, but I'm on there every day. Michael_Yon. And I'm on Substack. And And I have my website, michaelyon.com.
Michael, thank you for fighting for our freedom. I wanted to even get into your personal life and what led you to all of these battles and all you do. But I appreciate you, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Joseph.
All right. Keep listening to TNT. We'll be back with more right after these words.